differences, that's going to be useful for Iran's trade.
China is Iran's number one trade partner, but this economic partnership has been restricted by the U.S. banking sanctions against Iran. In 2020, bilateral trade between the two states was less than $20 billion. Both sides agree that the new pact will pave the way for broader partnership, not only in economy, but in politics and security. It's crystal clear that Iran and China are strategic partners. China continues to buy Iran's oil amid the peak of the U.S. sanctions against Iran. But the new pact is a milestone. Observers say at a time when the U.S. is using its currency as a punishing tool, more countries are expected to jump on the wagon and create a united front as a counterforce to the U.S. economic pressures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The end of winter means that homeless and poorly housed people can be evicted again. These protesters demand decent housing and the end of evictions. In France, more than 300,000 people are homeless. More than 700,000 people are poorly housed. But 3 million of houses or apartments are empty, and millions of square meters of offices remain vacant, which is a record. These are official figures from INSEE, the National Institute for Statistics. Is there a solution? A French law from 1945 allows the requisition of empty buildings, but the government refuses to apply it.
Public authorities are obliged to give accommodation to homeless people. If not, the government is illegal. Secondly, a law exists on empty buildings, which is still not applied. Entire buildings are empty since decades because the value of these buildings increases more by leaving them empty than by renting the space to people. The state should automatically requisition them.
But instead of organizing decent housing, the French government has spread rumors that it will evict more people than former years, without necessarily providing an alternative accommodation.
Me and my children are housed at my friend's home. My husband is at his friend's home. That's our situation for 15 years. Since more than 15 years, we are demanding a social accommodation to the city hall. That's insane.
In a spectacular protest action this week, homeless migrants deployed 300 tents at the Place de la République. The homeless and poorly housed people demand to be housed in decent places. They say there are enough empty buildings to accommodate everybody. What a dramatic contradiction between these people living in tents and huge empty buildings like the Samaritaine here in the center of Paris.
The COVID makes the housing crisis worse, but the real problem is the speculation on real estate that leads concretely to an outburst of the rents, to the eviction of people so that the apartments can be sold empty.
The police supervised thoroughly this march in Paris. Housing people in empty buildings is apparently touching a sensitive chord. Similar marches took place on Saturday in many French cities and also in 20 other European Union countries.
This proves that the housing issue is a global problem that should be resolved not only by the French government, but also by the European Parliament and European Commission. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
Just ahead of United States President Joe Biden's long-awaited first press conference, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell made the media rounds claiming that substantial economic progress has been made. However, that contradicted extensive new data from the Fed itself, which found that the economy contracted in February, while their national activity index plunged into the negative for the first time since last April, the peak of the pandemic. The index, based on 85 indicators regarding personal spending, employment, retail sales, and production, has been in the negative over the average of the last 3 months, disproving widespread bullish talk that the U.S. economy is recovering. What is certain is that there was no so-called snapback or V-shaped recovery. Instead, a K-shaped recovery has become cemented, with the wealth of the upper class increasing while the lower and middle classes continue to plunge. Biden recently approved a $1.9 trillion emergency coronavirus plan, but it didn't include a single long-term social program. He also backtracked on key issues such as a $15 minimum wage, student debt relief, and the size of household stimulus. This week, top pollster Ipsos found that Biden's approval rating plunged 6 points.
The Democrats do not want to have all the power to run the country, because when they do, becomes obvious that they're not doing it on behalf of anybody but the Ruling Club. They're doing as little as they can to keep the pitchforks, to try and keep the pitchforks at home and not disturb the profit-making powers of the profitable industry of healthcare, for example.
George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump all refused to boost the economy of the everyman despite prolonged economic malaise. Failure to remedy the terrible economic data from 2020 and over the first quarter of 2021 could cause major dissension in an incredibly polarized nation.
Fascism comes in on the failure of social democracy. They get angry because there's not even social democracy to fail. They may try social democracy, but they're at that point yet. And they're in control of things. This is one of the reasons I don't think fascism is an imminent threat, because what do they have to gain by it that they don't already have?
The U.S. is betting that a major coronavirus vaccine rollout will return economic growth to pre-pandemic levels no later than the second half of this year, hopefully. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Hours after the Yemeni army launched one of its largest retaliatory attacks on the Saudi-led coalition, thousands of Yemenis took to the streets of Sana'a to mark the National Day of Resilience.
The gathering today is the gathering of those who trust in God. These people have proven that they were able to take advantage of the war to develop their military capabilities. Today, our victory is crowned by our ability to stop Aramco by using our strategic deterrent weapons.
Yemenis say the seventh year of Saudi rule will be different as the Yemeni army is escalating its retaliatory attacks against Saudi facilities, pushing the kingdom to stop its years-long war and to move toward a political solution to protect its oil giant Aramco from Yemeni attacks.
Yemeni people have withstood the aggression surprisingly. The Saudi enemy declared this criminal war from the White House in Washington to bring the Yemeni people to their knees, but they failed because Yemenis trust in God. 6 years ago, Yemenis woke up to the bombing of Saudi airstrikes and the bloodshed of children and women. And today the Saudis and Emiratis woke up to the burning of their oil companies by our missiles and drones. This proves that Yemeni people are getting stronger year after year.
Earlier, the Yemeni army inaugurated the seventh year with the National Day of Resilience operation against several military and economic targets in Saudi Arabia. The operation is the largest so far and used 18 drones and 8 ballistic missiles.
Thousands of Yemenis have gathered to mark the 7th anniversary of Saudi rule and siege of their country. They say their army now is capable of forcing the kingdom to stop its deadly war without conditions. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
In the English town of Batley, a local grammar school has caused major controversy after a teacher showed a blasphemous cartoon of Islam's holy prophet Muhammad to students during a religious studies class. Outraged parents of Muslim students began protesting outside the school gates on Thursday, demanding the school take action against Islamophobia.
The incident from Monday, 22nd of March, must also be investigated from a criminal perspective.
Yes.
Given that it was a clear attempt to stir up religious hatred. We also use this opportunity to call upon the entire British Muslim community to review the materials being taught in their children's schools.
Batley Grammar School reacted quickly, suspending the teacher, launching an investigation, and apologizing to parents. However, the British press and politicians have opted to condemn the protesters instead, adding further fuel to the fire.
I was disturbed to see scenes of people protesting outside the school. That is not right. We shouldn't have teachers, members of the staff of schools feeling intimidated.
The creator of the universe, Allah, the most merciful, doesn't need a crowd hanging around outside the school.
Many details about what the protesters have been demanding are not clear. Press TV spoke to locals to find out more.
As far as I know, the parents have been very, very responsible. I mean, many of the protesters are not even parents, and the parents have acted very responsibly, very, very professionally, and they should be commended. You know, they're the basically the victims of this situation, but they're also the stars of this situation, that they've basically acted in a calm, collective manner. They've not made any unreasonable demands to the school. They've not asked for anything untoward to happen towards the teacher. They've been very, very responsible, and they should be commended for their stance and for their actions.
The school has acknowledged that the resource used in Monday's lesson was completely inappropriate and had the potential to cause considerable offence within the community. However, many online are now arguing that Muslims need to accept insults on the Holy Prophet as part of freedom of speech, and if they don't like it, they have to essentially lump it. However, with further Muslim action planned elsewhere in the country, and also the media continuing to hype up the story, it's likely that things will continue to escalate going forward. Robert Carter, Batley.
After firing two cruise missiles Sunday, North Korea launched two ballistic missiles early Thursday morning. U.S. President Joe Biden responded.
There will be responses if they choose to escalate. We will respond accordingly. But I'm also prepared for some form of diplomacy, but it has to be conditioned upon the end result of denuclearization.
The latest launches are widely considered to be in violation of UN Security Council sanctions against Pyongyang, which are strongly supported by the United States and limit North Korea's ability to develop its economy. North Korea's recent missile tests demonstrate that maintaining the status quo in terms of ongoing United Nations Security Council sanctions is unacceptable to Pyongyang. And experts agree that the timing of the tests was clearly designed to influence the Biden administration's ongoing North Korea policy review. Experts argue that the U.S. needs to live up to the Singapore summit agreement between former U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, which was violated with recent joint U.S.-South Korea military drills.
From North Korea's perspective, the South Korea-U.S. military exercises, pressure on human rights and sanctions are threatening. Pyongyang needs to be guaranteed the right to live. If the U.S. has a sincere attitude before approaching North Korea, they will get a response.
U.S. officials recently toured the region to consult allies. With expectations, the Biden administration's new policy toward North Korea will be announced within weeks. Frank Smith, Seoul.
EU leaders have concluded the first of a two-day virtual summit, which was dominated by the bloc's highly controversial COVID-19 vaccination program. It was confirmed during the event that more vaccines have been exported from the EU than have been administered to the bloc's own inhabitants.
Companies have to honour their contract to the European Union before they export to other regions in the world.
So the EU's ban on vaccine exports, when deemed necessary, is going ahead. But critics say the damage has already been done due to the European Commission's mismanagement to date. The leaders' summit was given official data showing just 4.1% of the EU's population have been fully vaccinated. A third wave of the coronavirus is taking hold in the 27-nation bloc. Cases are spiking, most notably in France, Poland, Italy, and Germany. Infection rate increases are being recorded in several other EU nations, including here in Belgium.
This means hospital admissions are rising. More are being transferred to intensive care units. The bottom line is people are dying due to the pace of the EU's vaccination rollout programme.
There's economic disaster looming for millions of businesses in the EU as new lockdowns are announced. In some nations, jobs are being lost at a record rate. The tourism industry is on its knees. Citizens are frustrated.
Our government was telling that it would be better in May and the opening of the cafes, restaurants and so on. And nowadays, I don't dare make a plan.
For the moment, the situation is so difficult that everybody's complaining about everything.
And I understand that. It's not easy.
Critics say the health, social and economic consequences of the EU's failures during this crisis are not yet fully clear. Analysts warn there are likely to be dire political consequences for the establishment. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
The debate.
Hello, welcome to the debate. I'm Coffee the Halfway. The US social media giant Facebook has banned Press TV page. Again, Press TV has decried the move as censorship and an attack on free speech. The platform cited violations of its, quote, community standards as the reason without an explanation. In this edition of the debate, we will question what Facebook's definition of community standards is and whether this U.S.-based social media platform has political motives when it decides to close down media outlets like Press TV, which, by many accounts, hurts Facebook's own image of being unbiased. Facebook has once again shut down the page of Press TV News Network, this time permanently, in yet another attack by the U.S.-based social media giant on Iranian media outlets. Facebook said in a note that this decision is irreversible. The company attempted to shut down Press TV's account without giving any prior warning. Facebook justified the act by claiming that Press TV has failed to follow the Facebook community standards. However, the company did not specify the so-called violations of its rules. The social media platform has, on a number of occasions, attacked Press TV, despite its own claim of providing space for freedom of expression. One such attack took place in mid-January, when Facebook temporarily deleted Press TV's page, which had more than 4 million followers. The news outlet, however, had its page restored after appealing the platform's decision to remove it. The attack coincided with Press TV's coverage of post-election violence in the U.S. Press TV has repeatedly fallen victim to censorship, not just on Facebook, but also on other fronts, including Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Over the past years, Facebook, along with other mentioned companies, have repeatedly targeted Press TV, among other media outlets of Iran, and the countries critical of the West and the Israeli regime's occupation of Palestine. It appears that the UK has also followed in footsteps of the US when it comes to censoring media. The UK broadcast regulator Ofcom recently stripped the Chinese media company of operating on its cable network, an exact move that it did to Iran's Press TV back in 2012.
I think we need to recognize that in today's day and age, the various social media, in particular we're talking about Facebook today, is being weaponized in the tools of the Western powers to actually try and make sure that the agendas that Western powers have are going to be promoted, and anyone that is resisting or saying different things to what the Western powers want to hear and want other people to hear outside, they're going to try and make sure that those voices are suppressed.
Joining us for this edition of The Debate, journalist and political commentator Marwa Osman joins us from Beirut. We also have broadcast journalist Richard Medhurst, who joins us from Vienna. I'd like to welcome you both. Richard Medhurst, first over to you. It's a sad day for the freedom of expression, I have to say it. But your reaction to Iran's Press TV Facebook page, which had over 4 million members, and how Facebook shut it down without prior warning for what it claimed was Press TV's failure to follow, quote, its community standards.
Thanks for having me on. So, I mean, my initial reaction is it's despicable, but I'm not surprised because, you know, this is part of the general agenda that these big tech companies have, these Silicon Valley companies have, which is executing the agenda of the national security state. So, you know, outlets like Press TV, like CGTN, like Telesur, they're constantly harassed. They're constantly having their pages and accounts shut down because they can't have adversarial points of view. They can't have anti-imperialist points of view, you know, opinions that challenge U.S. hegemony and the occupation, the Israeli occupation of Palestine. You know, these are topics that cannot be touched. And so they use bogus arguments like, Press TV is violating the community standards, but they don't actually provide any examples of that or any justification. And the fact that they have a monopoly on the big tech market, these companies like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, it gives them this immunity that they can get away with, and no one is going to hold them accountable because they want to have their cake and eat it both. They want to be treated as a platform while also taking decisions that a publisher would undertake, which is to censor, which is to control, which is to pick and choose what they allow on the platform. And you will never see CNN or BBC have their pages taken down. You know, this only happens to Press TV and to CGTN and to Telesur, which also had their page removed by Facebook in 2018. At the time, Facebook couldn't even give a proper reason. They gave three different reasons and then reinstated the page finally. And it's just another way to harass foreign outlets and adversarial journalism.
Well, let's talk about the foreign outlets and what Richard Medhurst, Marwa Osman called adversarial journalism. If I'm listening to this from the outside, I'm going to tell myself, well, if they're being banned, I want to go after what they're saying, because obviously they're saying something that is irking these tech giants. Why is it that they are allowed to do that and to continuously do that, and coincidentally, the countries like Iran, like China and Russia, not to mention Venezuela also, are their targets? I mean, what is it that puts Facebook and social media platforms like it on this footing with these countries?
Mind you, there's something that very important that you said, Kaveh, at the beginning of this show, when you said that they target media outlets that have an anti-imperial, anti-colonial message. And we're not only talking about Iran or Venezuela or, for example, Russia and China. There's also Iraq, Syria, Lebanon. There's Yemen, Al Masira, Al Manar, Al Itijah in Iraq. There are also journalists and influencers who also share this content on their pages, even if they don't work for any of the above-mentioned media institutions. They are also harassed. They are also having their pages at some point restricted, at other points deleted completely, like they did with Press TV. And this is not the first time. I could remember myself when I was working at a different TV channel back in 2014 when I was covering even the Syrian elections. I posted a video by Press TV while working for another media outlet because it was an absolute truth coming from the ground, from the people who went on and voted in the elections. And my post was restricted and I was given some sort of punishment, if you will. It was a 7-day punishment, and at that time there was no live feed, but I was punished 7 days. I wouldn't be able to open it. Mind you also, this is just an extension of what has been going on with the satellite monopoly as well, because what we see right now in the Facebook or in the social media outlets banning such freedom of expression coming from the other side, from the other camp, from the opposing camp of U.S. imperialism. We have seen it before with satellites, but Press TV has been banned on several satellites, Al-Manar. You can't watch them unless you get them on websites, and at certain points, if you even go to Al-Manar or Press TV or Al-Alam website in the U.S., for example, you might get feds knocking on your doors. That happens to my direct cousin who was living in New York. He used to watch Al-Manar on and Al-Alam TV as well, which is the which is an Iranian English speaking Arabic speaking channel, and he was called up by the feds for using this website. I mean, you could use websites to promote violence. You could use websites to promote intolerance, to promote Daesh and terrorism, to promote whatever you want from the liberal culture that is opposing to any Islamic culture, and it's for free, and it's freedom of expression, and it's freedom of thought. But God forbid you try and tell what's going on the ground from the native people, whether in Iran or in Syria or in China, or in Russia or Venezuela or in Cuba, for example, and you get banned via satellite, you get banned via social media. This is just an extension. This just shows how the corporations, the conglomerates that are owning the media dissemination throughout the world is actually in control of everything that happens, everything that is being said. Mind you, they label them as state-owned or state-funded. What do you call CNN? What do you call BBC? Are they not state-funded? I mean, come on, BBC Radio gets around $80 million per year just for propaganda funding. Just think about how much that amount of money would be for BBC TV and all of its TV channels. This is just absurd. It's typical colonial mindset. And at the end of the day, they actually admitted the censorship. Facebook admitted the censorship back when General Soleimani was martyred in Iraq, and people were sharing his photos. People who were saved by this man and by the likes of this man, they were celebrating the martyrdom of this man, and they got suspended. Press TV, I think at that time, it got its pages also suspended. Why? Because basically he falls under what the U.S. called sanctions, and Facebook admits that it goes along. It is just the extended hand of the U.S. Treasury.
Right. You know, I can't forget the time, Richard Medhurst, when the Syria war, I think it was a year old, into the protests that were going on. And there was coverage that mainly coming from CNN, I remember very distinctly, of this reporter who was reporting on the protests that were happening. And yet he wasn't in a place that protests were happening. There was protest sounds that were ongoing, and he had rehearsed. The rehearsal was actually caught before tape of how many people should be reported to be killed by him. And then Anderson Cooper comes on and says, how many people are killed? And he said 40 in the first hour. And this type of take on fake news, I should say, disinformation was being spread that way. And it became known, not only CNN, but other media outlets. So why is it that that's not being put into focus and part of the conversation, but rather you have, you know, channels like Press TV and others that you mentioned be the target?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And, you know, I also recall how they were saying on television that, you know, there were protests in the Saht al-Abbasin, which is a square in Damascus. And, you know, you know, I'm a few minutes away, and my reaction is to go there and see what's going on. And there's absolutely nothing happening there. So just blatant disinformation, blatant lying, and a full-on propaganda war. And that's been half of the conflict on Syria. It's not just been bombs and weapons. It's also been propaganda, words, ideas, and constant fake news, as you mentioned. And of course, they're never subjected to that, right? It's totally okay for these channels that are you know, completely state-funded and run by the British and American governments to lie the entire time. They're never going to have their pages taken down or, you know, have any kind of labels under their tweets. And I'm not saying that they should be completely censored or something like that. I'm just saying that it's a double standard that needs to be pointed out. You know, if they're going to be allowed to lie and to propagate misinformation and start wars, literal wars, like they did with Iraq, like they did with Syria, like they're trying to do with Iran all the time, then they can't come around and then accuse Press TV of lying or other channels of lying when they're not really. I mean, our reporting is factual. We're talking about what's happening on the ground and exposing that. And because it's factual, they're trying to censor that and you know, block us from educating people. And I think it's completely despicable. And as we pointed out, this doesn't happen just to adversarial channels. It's also happened to independent journalists. I mean, I had my YouTube channel demonetized last year because I was covering Israel very heavily, especially on the verge of this annexation plan that was set to take place on July 1st. So, and just in the last couple of weeks, you've had a slew of independent channels on YouTube completely demonetized or removed. I mean, it's disgusting. And they're just an extension of the national security state. And we know this because, you know, what more receipts do you want from 2013 after the Snowden revelations that all these companies, Facebook, Apple, YouTube, Microsoft, they're all working with the National Security Agency. They're all, in bed with the National Security State. We know this for a fact. It's not even a secret anymore. And so, it's absolutely disgusting how they can lie and start wars based on complete fabrications, and they get away with it. They get away with murdering millions of people, and yet they come around and they want to lecture us about, so-called disinformation. I think this is it is really an expression of a colonial mindset, as we just pointed out.
So we're looking tomorrow, Azwan, at a slew of topics that perhaps are hot-button topics for Facebook and other Western media and social websites, of course, Facebook being one of the big ones. And I think one of the ones that raises the red flag right away is Israel. So anything that has to deal pretty much with Israel is going to be under the microscope when it comes to Facebook. And we know that, obviously, Iran's Press TV is very critical of Israel and the legal actions that it exercises in the occupied territories. How much of a role does Israel play in this? Because many say that Israel is one of the influential factors when it comes to decisions that are being made, such as in this case, Facebook, with regards to Press TV.
Well, it's always been said that just look on who you can criticize, and that's who's controlling you. And that's basically what's happening with the social media platforms, just like it happened with conglomerates of media corporations around the world owned by people who either have an Israeli citizenship or are very good friends with the Israelis. And that's not new. I mean, if you go back to what happened in 2008 and in 2012 in Gaza, you find absolutely nothing about it in the U.S. Sponsored or the Western regime-sponsored mainstream media. What happened in 2006 in Lebanon, what happened later on in Syria, how it started. People keep saying that it was supposedly an uprising. No, it was never an uprising. Syrian security officers were being ththrown off bridges in Daraa. That's how it started. They were being shot at. And we have footage of that, but we cannot show you that footage. Why? Because we would get censored. Example, what happened with Press TV. Or we personally, the people who actually, me personally, I was censored. I'm never allowed to go live on Facebook anymore because at one time I just took my phone, my village is right across the, right on the border with occupied Palestine. I wanted to show the world how Israel is actually erecting an apartheid wall all the way on the border crossing between Palestine and Lebanon. I just showed that video, I was cut, and then was never allowed to go live on Facebook again. Again, just like what happened with Richard with monetizing, I was never allowed to monetize my channel to begin with, but at the same time, a lot of my videos, especially my show that I'm producing and presenting for Press TV, when I touch upon topics of occupation and topics of apartheid by Israel, they either get removed and I have to appeal and show them that it's actually facts because I never get anything without credible sources. And majorly, I try to use as much of their sources, which they tend to hide, especially from Reuters and AP and AFP, and use them in my reports just to make sure that my videos end up actually not being removed. Same thing with Press TV. Press TV gets its reporters on the ground. They are natives, usually, most of the time they're natives, getting information from the people who are being sanctioned, who are being killed, bombed. And at the end of the day, they get sanctioned themselves, removed themselves from social media for telling the truth.
Okay, Richard Medhurst, so let's try to put things into perspective and really spell this out and make the viewer that's watching this realize what is going on, at least the way that I'm looking at it. I don't know if you agree or not. So you have the mainstream media in the West, in the U.S., outlets like CNN from the U.S. or BBC from the U.K., and they're spelling a narrative through their government-funded news channels. And then you have Iran's, for example, Press TV and its websites and its social media accounts that perhaps what they're saying runs counter to what they are saying, especially in the foreign policy arena, like the war on Syria, like the war in Afghanistan, and you name it. And that's maybe why Press TV is being targeted. Is that a correct take on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the major, that's a major crux of this issue, because they need narrative control. They have to have narrative control. If you remember, just for example, the buildup before the war in Iraq, I mean, it was 24/7 brainwashing in the mainstream media, and it serves a purpose. It's to acquiesce the population. It's to make them, swallow this nonsense and accept seeing body bags coming home, seeing billions of dollars, trillions of dollars being spent on military surplus. So they need this narrative control. It's very important. You can't have the population being educated. And, what Press TV provides, what Telesur provides, what Sputnik, what RT, what CGTN provide, they provide a completely fresh and different take on things. And as a matter of fact, it's not just a different take. Oftentimes, the truth, the plain old truth, which they're not getting on mainstream media. And it's incredible that they want to talk about state-controlled narratives when we just had a massive leak from Anonymous about the British Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which is their State Department, giving out contracts to Reuters and BBC to go and spread anti-Russian propaganda. And also with Bellingcat, which helped push this lie about this chemical gas attack in Douma. And, it's incredible. Like, are they going to have their pages taken down for disinformation? Are they going to have labels put under their tweets or their pages that they're state-sponsored? Of course not. Even though we have receipts, we have documents, we have literal official documents showing that these are not just some kind of random contracts. They were kept secret and confidential on purpose. So there was a nefarious element to this. And so, going back to your assessment, I agree with it. Yeah, and I think it's all about narrative control, and they must have this because the propaganda machine, it goes hand in hand with the war machine. They're one and the same. And CNN, BBC, the mainstream outlets, be it on television or the big tech companies, they're all serving the same purpose. They're all serving the State Department and Whitehall.
Okay. Final question, and please, less than a minute, Marwa Osman. So you have, as you've been targeted, as you said in the past, and you may keep getting targeted. Will that stop you? Will that limit
Absolutely
you, or will
not.
That give you more of Never. An incentive to go out and do what you're
Never.
Doing?
We come from an area where we are now. We are never used to bombs and explosions. We are never going to get used to that. But that doesn't kill us actually really makes us stronger and more steadfast into telling the truth, screaming it to the world, telling them, look, this is what's happening. We are living this. This is exactly what's happening. Same thing when I get, I had like from 2012 up to 2019, I toured Europe talking about what was going on in my region, in Syria and Iraq and in Lebanon. And every time people would see me, they would think that I was part of ISIS. I would tell them, I would explain to them, like, look, that's not the truth. We are not like that. I myself dodged an explosion with two of my kids in my car because of ISIS. We gave out the best of our
okay.
men to fight off this thing to keep us protected. And this is exactly what we do. Keep telling the story. Stick to the goals. Our goal is to tell the truth, tell the story no matter what. And at the end of the day, they have something to fear
okay.
about us. We have nothing to fear from them.
Thank you so much. Sorry, but we're just fresh out of time. Let me thank journalist and political commentator Marwa Osman there from Beirut. And thank you, Richard Medhurst, broadcast journalist from Vienna. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikko Vitahwe, the entire team is goodbye. Until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam. As a reminder, we said that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, highly respected the source of emulation, Grand Ayatollah Hossein Brujadi, and tried to support him as the main source of emulation and decision-maker in seminaries. Thus, even in political issues, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, would advise students and religious scholars or ulama to follow Grand Ayatollah Brujadi in a bid to prevent division among seminaries. In response to a group of friends who had asked him to interfere in political affairs, the Imam said, "My duty in this period is to study and teach, and until Grand Ayatollah Brujadi is alive, I have no duty but to accompany him, give him consultation, and be in harmony with him." Stay tuned for more. Due to his political acumen, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, would always be consulted by Grand Ayatollah Brujadi. In fact, Grand Ayatollah Brujadi would avoid expressing his view on political issues before consultation with Imam Khomeini. Hujjatul Islam Mehri, referring to the meeting of Grand Ayatollah Brujadi with officials of Pahlavi regime, said, "I was at the presence of late Grand Ayatollah Brujadi that a representative came from the government and called for his agreement with the issue that he was going to implement. Grand Ayatollah Brujadi said, 'I will announce the answer to the government after consultation and exchanging views with some of the ulama.' I thought with which of the ulama he would consult over such issues. After a short while, I saw that Imam Khomeini came there at the request of Grand Ayatollah Brujadi and went to a room with him and talked for an hour. After an hour, Grand Ayatollah Brujadi sent his view to the government. Sometimes Grand Ayatollah Brujadi, in addition to consultation on important political issues, would invite the Imam to participate at the negotiations that he had with the government officials, or on behalf of him, talk directly with government representatives and officials." Thank you. Imam Khomeini's stance on Nawab Safavi's sentence to death was very harsh and instructive. The Fadayana Islam group, led by martyr Nawab Safavi, believed in military action against the despotic regime of Pahlavi, and that's why he had been sentenced to death. But Grand Ayatollah Burjali thought that the regime would not execute him. In view of this, he didn't make much effort to release Nawab Safavi. Yet Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was strongly opposed to execution of Nawab Safavi and his companions, although he was also opposed to military move against the regime. For this reason, the Imam had a lot of consultations with Grand Ayatollah Burjali to prevent their execution. The Imam's efforts were not successful, but he refused to take any measure to keep the status of the source of emulation. Hujjatul Islam Fakhr Yazdi said in this regard, Imam Khomeini had gone to Grand Ayatollah Burjali's house so that he might show a reaction against the execution of Nawab Safavi. The Imam was so upset that he threw his turban to the floor, saying, Sir, support this Sayyid whom they want to execute. Grand Ayatollah Burjali failed to prevent the execution of late Nawab Safavi, and the treacherous Shah martyred the innocent Sayyid. If the Imam had come out instantly and shouted, he would do an illegitimate act. Although he wanted to prevent the execution of Nawab Safavi, keeping the respect of Grand Ayatollah Burjali as the just jurisprudent and source of emulation in those days was more important than safeguarding Nawab. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was so sharp and clever in political affairs that Ayatollah Khashoggi had also predicted his effective role for the future of Islam. The Imam started struggle against the despotic regime of Muhammad Reza Pahlavi as a young scholar at the seminary school. He was so outstanding in politics that once Ayatollah Khashoggi said, the only person that is hoped to benefit the Iranian nation is Mr. Khomeini. Grand Ayatollah Burjadi had also said, I want to help this young man in a proper time so that he would be effective for Islam and Muslims. Although Imam Khomeini was a little upset with Grand Ayatollah Burjadi due to the issue of execution of Nawab Safavi by the regime, he would never allow anyone to speak ill of Grand Ayatollah Burjadi. Later, Ayatollah Ishraqi, the Imam's son-in-law, said, I had just become a member of the Imam's family. It was summer and he had gone to the city of Hamadan. At that time, apparently, he was not in a good terms with Grand Ayatollah Burjadi. I went to visit the Imam in Hamadan. I thought that it wouldn't be bad to criticize Grand Ayatollah Burjadi. As soon as I started speaking about him, the Imam was cross and put his head down. Then he raised his head and said, Mr. Ishraqi, I won't let anyone insult the leader of Muslims, no matter who he is or which position he has. Grand Ayatollah Burjadi's highly respected Imam Khomeini, although he had difference of opinion with him. In many cases, he would designate the Imam as his plenipotentiary representative for resolving problems. One of Imam Khomeini's daughters, Farideh Mostafavi, says in this regard, Before the 15th of Khordad uprising, whenever the traders of Tehran would come to Grand Ayatollah Burjadi to assign a congregational prayer leader for them, he would say, If Hajar Ruhollah Khomeini accepts the leadership of that mosque, he is the best person.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.